Talk Energy with Yes Europe is a podcast created by Yes Europe to interview leaders in the energy industry by asking them the most voted questions within the young energy professionals community.
Hello everyone, welcome to the third episode of Talk Energy with Yes Europe. I'm Ronnie, the co-lead of Knowledge Sharing at Yes Europe, and I'm also a PhD student at Imperial.
Jonas? And I'm Jonas, editor of a Future of Energy report and graduate student at ETH Zurich.
And today we are very honored to have invited the Senior Vice President B2C and E-Mobility of E.ON and CEO of E.ON Solutions, Dr. Frank Mayer. Frank has, in the past 4 years with E.ON, Frank has not only successfully developed the B2C and future home energy and global e-mobility divisions, but also helped the business to achieve high growth rates. And he's also a top innovator. He was listed among the top 100 innovators in Germany. And he has also had management positions in Vodafone. And before that, he was working at BCG. And I think if we are right, on the 1st of April, Frank will take on a new role as the CEO of E.ON Italia. Now, Frank, welcome to the podcast. And to start off, would you mind to give a short self-introduction and to yourself and also to the activities that you are looking after at E.ON?
Thanks, Ronnie. Happy to do so. Actually, we have at least one thing in common. I've also been at the Imperial College. I didn't know that you were there as part of my studies with some great memories before in Paris. And then I went there for some time. So this is one of the things actually about me. I'm very international. I love foreign cultures. I love, and that's the second thing in general, to learn from others and with others. And I'm curious. And this is one of the elements. I learned a couple of languages. I like traveling. My wife is from South America. So internationality is something that I breathe and live. Because I think that different perspectives make our life richer, and we can still learn so much from each other. Yeah, what else? I mean, you have said what I did. It's, I think, more important to potentially tell a bit what motivates me, what kind of person I am. And I'm actually intrinsically motivated to build something that makes a difference for society and has impact and relevance of people's lives. So this is something that I found out gives me a lot of energy, makes me actually put and invest my time into something with a lot of passion. And when I take a role, I ask this question, is this something where I can have actually impact on society, on people, on people's lives? And ideally, help to improve this, make this world a bit better. And that's why I did the things I did. And both industries, telecommunication and energy, are very relevant for society, for people. In particular there, I'm also somebody who enjoys creating new structures, creating growth based on new digital products. Usually, we find in big, large corporations the possibility to have impact, because big, large corporations have many customers, have a certain power, a certain investment power. On the other hand, many large corporations, in particular in Europe, often struggle to really transform into new structures. They have been successful in the past, but obviously need to be open for new business models. And this is something actually I enjoy. I enjoy to take the challenge to build onto something existing, which has been successful in the past, and understand what was the basis of the success. Take this, because this is good, and create something new out of it, which is growing and which actually builds a, in my case now, sustainable future. So these are things, growth, digital, innovation, sustainability, and at the same time, rigorousness. I'm very rigorous to pursue my targets when I have a vision. I actually really follow it.
Indeed, we are very curious about one key word you mentioned, which is growth. We all know that, I mean, Eon Solution has been rapidly growing for the past 4 years. So can you elaborate a little bit more? What exactly did you do? What kind of strategy did you use to facilitate this high growth rate?
Yeah, first of all, a few words on what it is about, maybe. So we call it Future Energy Home to make clear that we come from energy, and it's different from any other things in smart home or whatever. It's digital energy systems for the home to enable actually for millions the energy transition in Europe and the decentral energy world. And this is produce your own power, be independent with PVs, store it in your battery or in innovative solutions like the Eon Solar Cloud. Then heating solutions, which are efficient or electricity based, like heat pumps, which is coming more and more, and e-mobility solutions. And all this combined in a home energy management system, which makes all this system at home best comfortable for you, best efficient for you, and easy to manage. Because as such, it's complex, and for the customer, it needs to be easy. So this is what it is about. And when we started 4 years ago, actually, we really started from zero. There was nothing. Sometimes I say it felt even less than nothing, because we also had a legacy. And we haven't had experience in these new products. We have never sold physical products. We have had no logistics, no physical products, no commercial management, no delivery. And this needed to be built from scratch. And today we look back at the business, which is in size about 700 million revenues, which is still strongly growing, which became profitable in 3 years. In record time, which has now more than 1.2 million service customers in Europe, which is able to install 100,000 giga installations per year. That means a PV, for instance, not a smart meter. There we do as Eon millions, but larger installations like PV or heating system, 100,000. And with that, actually being leading in Europe. This is what makes me actually really proud if I look back on what we created. But the best is, it's not only a business, it's a purpose. It's a purpose because we are working on human mankind's biggest challenge, and that's global warming. Mm-hmm. And what motivates me and what motivates the people is that we can make a contribution against global warming mm-hmm. on CO2 savings. Mm-hmm. To give you a bit of what this means, this year, we're going to save 500,000 tons of CO2 with these products, and this is equivalent to 40 million trees. And we like to speak about our future in the home forest of 40 million trees, which actually, first of all, you need to imagine a forest of 40 million trees, difficult to imagine. But the best is that this grows, continues to grow, and obviously PV produces every year. So this year it's 40 million, next year it's 50, 60, whatever. And we need a lot more. But it's a good start, and it's a contribution that every single one can make.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds very fascinating. We have briefly talked a little bit about the past, and I also want to understand a little bit about what the future would look like in your mind for Eon, or Eon Solutions, or even the new post you're going to take up, whichever you feel comfortable with talking about.
Yeah, first of all, you need to realize that Eon is going through a massive transformation. So, and it not only Eon, the entire energy system and industry. So from a central production-based utility system, we go towards a decentral, democratic, let's say, energy system, where millions of people contribute by producing their own power, managing their own power, and trading it in the future. And this is massive. This is, you can't imagine how massive this also culturally is. That's a real disruption, and that's a real culture change. For me, actually, that was to realize. I like using pictures, and I said time ago here in our meeting, at E.ON, that I thought until that day when I started 4 years ago that I was a manager, but then I realized that in reality I'm actually a dancing teacher for huge elephants to dance. Because E.ON is a big elephant. And the question actually really is not which ideas you have, yeah, but how do you make this elephant dance? But if it dances, then it can make actually quite some progress. So this is actually one of the things you need to realize, and I realized what it is really about. And if you want to create impact, it doesn't stop with the idea. You need to have the ability to bring the idea down to smaller steps and make the elephant dance at the end of the day. The rubber meets the road in the delivery, and you need both sides. So how does the future look like? I think the future will need, if we want to get near to our CO2 targets 2050, we'll need millions more of decentralized energy systems. And that's why we started a time ago when at least at several companies, big companies, some of these companies did not yet invest in these new business models. I truly believe that this is a future business model for E.ON, which will generate growth and which also will enable the energy transition in Europe. You can't, I do not know any model which works with energy transition until 2050 without the, let's say, millions of future energy homes. And the best you can do, it's not sufficient, but the best you can do is to produce your own energy and use it exactly there, immediately store it. That obviously is the best you can do for a sustainable energy transition. It's not sufficient. You need to do a lot more. But it's one of the elements. E-mobility is a second. We have made, and you are experts in the group, we've made lots of, let's say, good progress in electrification and in power generation, sustainable power. But mobility is not yet green. And e-mobility is the chance, also not sufficient. We all know that that we need to think about additional topics like H2 and so forth. But I do not also know any scenario which can work without a significant rise of e-mobility. And first things first, I think you can now discuss 20,000 other alternatives. But yes, we definitely need a huge pickup and penetration where it makes sense in a mass market of mobility. And then let's do it. Let's make it happen. And
thank you, just jump in. I really like the picture of dancing elephants in this regard. But now look on like a whole group of dancing elephants in the industry. So really hearing from your assessment on the industry. Basically, because we have already mentioned it with e-mobility, what are the main challenges in the overall industry behind e-mobility? So what you can say us about that?
Well, you have a couple of challenges. The first, I think, was to have the technology right. So I think that we made a big progress. There are now proof points in the market that e-mobility cars are reliable, have the reach you need, that actually anxiety from distance and reach is, from my point of view, at least for many applications, a myth. People don't yet use sufficiently e-cars. I do. And 80% of the trips that in average people do are below 30 kilometers. So it's a myth that you don't have enough reach. Yes, for certain applications. Oh, sure. For 10% of high distance traveling or whatever, but not for 80%. So technology has proven that that it is an alternative to combustion engines. That is number one. Number two is a challenge. Okay, it was too expensive. Yeah, so if you have a technology that works, but it is too expensive, it's not adopted by the people. So now we meet kind of a very interesting point in our history, I would say, where technology is such advanced that it pretty much matches the old one. It gets a certain scale, so which scale is also important for cost advantage. And at the same time, we get traction in terms of policies and subsidies, where policies see, okay, we need to kickstart such new technologies. We have seen that in the past. And if there was one thing good about Corona, obviously there's nothing good about Corona and the pandemic. What I see is that we can, however, think about how we can make such a crisis a chance. And I do see a chance and an opportunity, for instance, for investing in future energy systems and energy infrastructure, for instance, in mobility. And we see this also in numbers. In numbers, we have September last year, we have had the first months where in Europe registered e-cars, newly registered e-cars, have been more than combustion engine diesel, particularly diesel cars. And that's a signal. We have a rising trend. We have had almost 20% of newly registered cars in the last months. This is massive compared to the years before. So you speak now about something that gets critical mass. And that has been one of the big challenges and serious. So now come the next topics, like, okay, you need the infrastructure, which hasn't been a bottleneck from my point of view so far, to actually enable a further pickup and so forth. But I'm very positive about the possibilities which we have in making that reality.
Frank, and as well, as you mentioned before, really the challenge with climate change mitigation, and you are very committed when it comes to this issue and the role E.ON and its solutions can play. Basically, what are the challenges in the utility sector for overcoming climate change in general, especially, and what are the innovative solutions which are required, which you can really bring into the spot there?
Well, this is a big question, yeah. So I think nobody has an ultimate answer on how you can overcome climate change, yeah. And many people are working on that for decades, and there's a big discussion, for sure. I think I always take different perspectives. I fly out a couple of years, 50 or whatever, zoom out and see what are the scenarios, what can the world look like and so forth. But then I also zoom in and then take my consequences out of that. And I think obviously consequences, we need to save CO2 where we can. And this has different elements. This is for me a future energy home wherever it is possible. I say we should make a future energy home mandatory wherever it is not contradictory for whatever reason. So why should you actually at all build a new home without PV and a battery and a heat pump in Europe if there is not a really, really good reason for it? Similar for mobility. We will need more sophisticated different technologies, yes, but definitely we need e-mobility. Yeah. You need green power production wherever you can. And all this is not sufficient. We also need to think, and this is then out of energy, concerns all of us. We need to change our behavior as people. I mean, this is obviously a very big topic. We got used to so many luxury that at the end, in reality, is if you would account for the cost of CO2 we produce, actually it's not affordable. And there's actually, I think we start to discuss as society in the right way that we make CO2 a metric to measure it and give it a cost. It's very difficult to make it clear what this costs. Look at nuclear power. Now we go luckily out of nuclear power. Nobody really knows what the cost is of all that. So nobody really knows in the complexity what the cost of a kilogram of CO2 is. But at least we start to change the mindset of people by giving it a cost. Whereas before, for instance, in Germany, we made everyone pay for subsidizing green technologies. So this makes it actually in the mentality of the people a burden. It should not be a burden. The burden is CO2. And these are not sufficient for what you say to overcome climate change. But these are actually things we definitely must do. And let's start with what we for sure need to do.
These were innovation, but yeah, not sufficient enough, but we need more innovations. And I do want to ask a little bit more about innovation, since you have been a proven expert in innovation, I have to say. You were the CIO, Chief Innovation Officer, and also the top 100 innovator in Germany. And my first question regarding innovation is that, how do corporations cultivate organizational innovation? And what are the typical challenges or obstacles that you have observed?
Yeah, very good question. First, very important for me is to make clear what innovation is. And I think there is a misperception, and that starts in many corporations with it. That's the difference between innovate and an invention. So an invention, let's say, is a scientific idea. And I'm a scientist. I did a PhD in mathematical physics, so I can tell you something about also this field, which I also love, and the richness of it. So you invent things. An innovation is a new technology or a new idea or whatever. And an innovation for me in a business is the ability to bring an invention into the market and scale it. Then this is an innovation. And that's where the first challenge is. Often innovation units in huge corporations are separated from the business and get some money and should test out things and work with startups and all that, which is okay. But they missed a link in order to actually do innovation, in the sense that if there is a promising, let me call it, idea or invention, how to actually scale it and bring it into the market. And there is where you need to work on. And there is where I invested all my time. The ideas are also a challenge, but actually there are different experts you can work with. We do. You work with research centers like RWTH Aachen, like ETH Zürich, like Imperial College. They are experts, which are a lot better than anyone in any innovation unit in a corporation. You need to have a business acumen to understand which of these technologies has the potential to change a customer's life to something better, has the possibility to really solve a customer or a societal problem. And then you need to have the operational excellence in order to bring it to the market. That's innovation. And it starts that this is misunderstood many times, because then innovation stays and people also maybe like to be there and go to San Francisco and meet people and invest here and there and all that. It's all nice, but it's not innovation in what I call innovation. Not only, it's don't misunderstand me, it's not that it's not part of innovation, the second part is critical essential. How do you bring it into a business? How do you test it there? How do you really are honest to yourself? If you sell it to customers, you gather the feedback, and your baby might be not good, and you need to kill it, the test you did, and do something else. We did. You asked at the beginning what we did 4 years ago. We started really from scratch. I needed, we failed several times. But that's not a problem. It's not a problem to make mistakes. The problem is if you don't learn from mistakes. If you want to learn new structures, or to your question, if you want to do innovation in the sense what I mean, you need to test all things. You need to accept that you make a mistake, but you need to learn fast. Yeah, a mistake is also not the target of it. Obviously, you want to be successful, but it's part of the process. Mm.
So,
and this is a cultural topic in many corporations for sure, because culturally big operations have usually some mentalities. I actually, so later you asked me for thoughts. I don't want to say advices. One thing comes to my mind now. I actually invest a lot of time to learn about psychology. First of all, because I like it. I like to understand how the brain works and how people work and what is making us motivated and so forth. I really like people. I like that. But it's also about organizational psychology. And if you see a big organization, then a huge organization has its history and it has built up money, power, business over time. So at a certain moment in time, it has a lot to lose. And if you're rich, somebody has a lot to lose. Then one part of you psychologically is to preserve. So then you are risk averse. So you are less inclined to test out new things because you're afraid of risk and losing what you have. If you start something completely from scratch, you have nothing to lose, and your psychology is a different one. And this you need to have balanced and also make. And big corporations clear that that the risk averseness is actually a false safety feeling. You might feel safe today, but in the exponential developments of this century, even the biggest corporations can just disappear in a time frame of a couple of years. And we have a couple of examples which help. Mm-hmm. Well, it's about psychology a lot here. It's about mindset. It's about, at the end, you can say, then culture.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing so much about innovation and drawing this comparison about what we traditionally think is innovation. What's the difference between invention and innovation? And the other question I have on innovation, you actually answered part of it already. And that question is, how to people get more innovative as an individual. And to help us understand this, we would like to ask you to share a little bit about the sources of your innovation spirits. You know, when you were studying, when you were going through so many careers, where does this innovation spirits come from? What kind of experiences? So our, you know, young community members could get some inspiration as well.
That's a good question. You have good questions. And this is actually already a good start. Very important start for innovation is asking questions. And on the other side, curiosity. Are you curious? Do you want to learn? This is important. And many people will say, yes, I'm curious, I want to learn. But there is a big difference. There are people, and you might know some, that are intrinsically curious. They want to learn. They want to understand. And this is a bit of also, let's say, still part of my scientific DNA. So I think this you need to truly want to understand things and be curious. And now, then you will find ways. If you want to answer a question and understand things, you ask questions, you speak to people, you go to lectures, you go to conferences, you listen to podcasts, you have all the information digitally available, then you can get everything. Me personally, I did always a lot of trainings and whatever I can do also to continuously learn. And I still do. I like to learn. So I just mentioned that in the last years I dealt with psychology. I haven't done this 10 or 15 years ago, but now it's a phase where I really like it. I now go to Italy. I recognize again that I like learning language again. I did a couple in the past. Yeah. And it's again, you need to like it. Other people, it's not good or bad. Some will say, oh no, it's rather a burden. I think if you seek for something and you really are curious, then you find the information, you will actually go for it. And the nice thing about our society nowadays is that you have access to pretty much everything. You know? And I don't need to tell you how this works. You can tell me. And so, and then there is, I think, yeah, the other thing is you should not stop at the moment where you understood the problem. That's science. You need to understand about yourself whether it really motivates you if you then go the painful path to bring something that you understood into implementation. And I by purpose say painful path, because this is not shiny, that's not nice, you have problems, fuck ups, things don't work, and you need to speak to customers who are not happy, and it's not great, I have an idea and things and so. This is really, and you can speak to any entrepreneur who has built a business, be it a startup or somebody who did it in a corporation like we did here, that this is tough and it's hard time, and you need energy for this, and you need to have the conviction that you do this because ultimately you believe in what you do and you have a clear plan, and you ultimately are convinced that with what you do you can make a difference for people or society. At least it's what motivates me. It might be a different motivation for somebody else, but you need something like that.
Frank, that's a really good advice you can give to us. Now, coming from your advice, we now want to focus more on more takeaways we could learn from your expertise. Reviewing the track record, working in high-level positions in management consulting at BSG, to telecommunications at Vodafone, to utilities and energy solutions at E.ON. What are basically your three top advices for students or young professionals you can give based from your expertise coming from the past and also going into the future?
I'm hesitant to give advices. Yeah, I think advice is a strong word. I can share experience. And I can share what I did. And this is probably the first thing then also I want to say. You need to go your way and understand what is your way. Listen, learn. I did this and do this and continue to do this for many people. Understand what they did, what was successful, what not, how they felt. But also ask them really how they felt and not the shiny things and great and stuff. So what is important in life for you? You need to deal with that question, even though you might, or many might not, you might probably not have never an ultimate answer, but you will get nearer to it. And I'm not going to give advice in the sense of say you need to do this like that or shoot it, because this can't work. My recommendation is find a way, your own way, what actually really counts in life for you. That's number one. Number two is be curious, be also courageous and brave. Why? Because you can make a difference. This world is something special. I think life is something special. It's worth to be protected. And not only protected, it sounds even defensive. It's worth to be developed further, to be enjoyed, to be understood, to be improved. Yeah. And you can make a difference. You are highly educated people in a global society. You have access to any knowledge you want to get. So be curious and be courageous to take part of that and be part of changing, let me say, the world a bit. And the one thing I definitely learned over time is be focused as well. So if we spoke at the beginning of the elephant, you need to make a dance. Ultimately, if something big or relevant you want to move, a big elephant, you also need to slice it into pieces and make it smaller. You need to focus. You cannot do all and everything at the same time. This is something that also I needed to understand as somebody who is energetic, eager, young, and wants to bring things forward. What makes a difference? This is a question that you can easily say. And everywhere say, yeah, sure, I need to focus on what's different. It's so hard to be very clear about that and consequently follow it, because it means that you don't do other things and you accept that you actually lose traction in a certain other area as a business or whatever. And you are so powerful on the other side if you choose really your areas where you make a difference. And this is very individual. You, Mark, may choose and will choose something completely different than you, Ronnie, compared to myself. But I encourage you to deal with that question and find your answer.
So have your own way, be curious and courageous, and stay focused. Those are the three top advices. And that also concludes our next question today. So I want to say again, thank you very much for supporting Yes Europe and for coming to this episode.
Thank you. Before we conclude, allow me to say one more thing.
Yeah.
The most important thing, the three things I said are more on how you develop in your career and life. I think the very important thing is that everybody needs something that truly matters in life. For me, it's for instance my family, my children, my lovely wife, parents. Whatever it is for you, you need something that truly matters in life for you and that makes you balanced, that gives you energy, and actually gives you creativity. This I also encourage you never to forget. Then you will have energy for everything else you would like to do.
Thank you very much for that following up point. And I believe this will be very inspirational because I feel so. And I'm pretty sure all of our hundreds of thousands of audiences would hear this as well. And with that, again, thank you very much. So
thank you. It's a pleasure. And great initiative. As I said, I really congratulate to the initiative and taking the initiative, because this also is a way how you can actually make a difference in society. So please keep on going and keep on with this spirit and initiative.